Welcome to Sales Talk for CEOs. I'm glad you're here. I'll be interviewing CEOs who have successfully scaled their B2B sales organization. In each episode, I'll start by uncovering the sales background of each CEO, dig into the strategies they use to build their sales organization, and wrap it up with what the future holds. We'll cover the good, the bad, and the ugly of scaling a sales organization. I'm your host, Alice Hyman. Welcome to another episode of Sales Talk for CEOs. I am very excited today to have Ganesh here with me. He has built an amazing company with his co-founder that we're going to be talking about. Welcome, Ganesh.
Thank you, Alice. Very excited to be part of your show. Thanks for having me.
And tell us a little bit about your company and what your company does. I know you provide response management, but we want to hear about what you're doing.
Absolutely. So my company name is RFPIO. RFPIO stands for Request for Proposals, Input and Output. I'm sure most of you on listening to this podcast, or you yourself, Alice, might have heard the term called RFPs, you know.
Yes.
During the sales process, you know, you have to go through the RFP response process as a salesperson. You know, that is exactly what we do. We help companies to respond to RFPs more efficiently and effectively in a very timely manner, because every RFP will have deadline, an army of people working on it.
Yes.
And that it's a project by itself. We help those kind of teams to manage the entire RFP from the beginning till the end of submission in our application.
And anybody doing complex sale knows how important this is, because you have all of the other opportunities in your pipeline that may not have an RFP that you're trying to keep track of. And then you have all of these due dates on RFPs. And I know some companies even actually hire someone to manage their RFPs specifically because there are so many details. So it sounds like this is a much needed software for companies.
Absolutely. You know, in fact, you're right. There are complex sales process that involves RFPs. You know, you started the conversation. You said, Ganesh, you seem to have a product for response management. If the way we are seeing this market is, when you respond to an RFP, what we're eventually trying to do is, how can we democratize that content that we are using for an RFP into other processes? It could be you and I, or let's assume I'm your sales rep and you are my prospect. Alice is sending Ganesh an email, just an email. Hey, Ganesh, I'm looking for a product overview. I'm looking for your implementation plan. I need 3 references because I need to talk to them before I move forward with you. There is no RFP. There is no attachment. It is just an email. You are sending it to me with 3 bullets. If you have RFPIO, what you can do is essentially highlight the bullet number 1 with your mouse, right-click, look up product overview in RFPIO, because that is the exact content that went out the door last week as an RFP response. That is where I'm trying to say, what I was saying is, we're trying to democratize the content. That's why we don't just call RFP response. We're truly a response management platform, where you can leverage the responses, not just in RFP, everywhere, so that the entire company can speak the same language.
I love that. And making that transparency for everyone in the company and everyone who's working on this RFP, but not only this particular one, but others as well. And we all know that response management is critical, because if we miss a deadline, we're done. That RFP is over. We don't get another shot at
Absolutely.
It until it comes up again. So this is crucial. So now, as the CEO and founder, tell me, how did you get this company started? What was the idea behind it, and how did you come to start this company?
Yeah, I've told this before. RFPIO don't have a cool garage story like Apple or Google, or a dorm room story like Snapchat or Facebook. It is truly a product of that got evolved based on myself and my two other co-founders' experience in our prior jobs, you know, way back in 2013, 14 timeframe, you know, when I was working as a product manager, you know, I always constantly been pulled into responding to RFPs by my sales teams, you know, but if you look at, I worked for there almost 8 years in that company. Not one single year, my job description as a product manager even had a word RFP in my job description.
Oh, right, right.
But I cannot say, no, I'm not going to work on this RFP. I cannot ignore it because that is what is a breadwinner for the company. So I have to throw out everything that I've been doing on my primary job to just focusing on RFPs. So similarly, my other two co-founders, one Sundar, he was the engineering manager in that company. He had a similar situation where I was the subject matter expert for functionality of the product, and Sundar was the subject matter expert for the engineering side of technology, security. And my the other co-founder, Shankar, was the subject matter expert for implementation and training. So we all shared the common pain of responding to RFPs, you know, but that was not our primary job. You know.
Right. In the midst of everything else you have to do.
Exactly. So what we decided to do is we thought of automating that process so that we can simplify this, create some more efficiency. Because yeah. we had about 15, 20 sales reps. Every time they get an RFP, they come to us and say, Ganesh, can you fill this? I tell them, hey, Mr. Joe, I responded to this exact or kind of a similar RFP for Jane last week. Can you not use it? They won't say no. They would say, no, I'm not the expert. You are the expert. I would rather have, even if it is copy and pasting, we would rather have you do it because you are the subject matter expert. So it kind of became frustration. So it's funny, we have tried, you know, to create this, what I call as knowledge content, right? You know, what I did essentially was having a master Excel document, copy and pasted every unique question that I have to respond with all the answers that I've provided over the period of time, and had that, and I put it on Google Drive. What I saw essentially happening is people copied that, have their own version of copy of Ganesh's document, copy of this document, copy of that document. And if I updated one place because product got evolved, I updated one place, it never got updated. So we said, no, this is, Excel did not work. Excel became very, very native to my local desktop. So it didn't work. We tried Google Docs. It didn't work. We said, we are going to move that content into Salesforce Knowledge Manager.
Right.
We moved it. That's when we realized Salesforce, you know, license are very expensive. The subject matter experts are not on Salesforce, only the sales team were. So we said, no, we can't offer a license for product managers and business analysts. We said, we are going to move to a cheaper solution. We moved to what we call, you know, these Confluence wiki pages, internal SharePoint. We moved the content from this tool to these commonly used knowledge management platform. That's when we realized salespeople never logged into those systems. They have tons of overhead that they're already working on. They don't want to log into. So though it was cheaper solution, and eventually what happened is all the content became stale. You know, it was not. So we looked for an application that purpose built for this particular use case back in 2015. We saw a few options there, but those applications were not quite connecting the dots for, you know, the company that I worked for probably had about 200 employees then, you know, and it was not connecting the dots. So we dig deeper, and that's when we realized there's quite a bit of, you know, space and untapped market there. So we decided to take the reins on our own hand. Like you said, you know, we've been in business for a little over 5 years. Every application that we have used as a workaround solution, those companies are our customers. Microsoft Excel, we have used. Microsoft is our customer today. We have used Salesforce. Salesforce is our customer today. We have Google Docs. Google is our customer today. We have used Confluence, which is Atlassian's product. Atlassian is our customer.
Yes.
Every application that we have used as a workaround solution, they use RFPIO today to solve that very, very problem that we use them for. So it's a very proud moment. So we serve across different verticals and different customers. But, you know, that's a good story.
You solve a very important problem, and I'm very glad that you had that pain, so you came up with this solution now for salespeople, which is amazing. Yep. So when you first started the company, let's go back, right? You were selling. So a lot of CEOs start a company with co-founders, and they've never sold anything, but you were selling. So what perspective did you bring with you to starting this company, and were you the first salesperson for the company?
Yeah, I think I had the advantage because most of the time when you see, people when they see me, they think I'm an engineer. But I'm not an engineer per se. I did my master's of business admin, MBA in finance and marketing. I'm not an engineer. I don't code. So I started my career, did marketing, but right out of college, I was a feet on street salesperson. Basically, I have to go on the street, talk to the small vendors, make them invest in stock market. That was mine. I was working for a stock broker and I was selling insurance and stock market accounts. That's what I was doing.
Literally door to door.
Literally door to door. I have to drop my business cards, back in India. This is back in India. So I have to go sell. And then eventually I moved up my ladder. I was the head of sales. I was managing southern part of India. Entire South India was being managing as a sales head there. But that's when 2008 market crash I saw, but it didn't impact for me. But, what I learned from that is, stock market was not my cup of tea. I've seen two crashes in front of my eyes where customers really lost all they had in stock market when the market crashed. So that's when I realized, okay, maybe this is not, me doing, stock market. So I wanted to venture into, technology. So I joined a startup back in India it was a career down. I stepped down. I took as a business analyst and I started from way up. But no matter where I went, sales was always in my DNA, I guess. I wanted to sell, and I liked talking to people. I liked pitching some ideas. I liked selling something, that kind of translated, when three of us started this company, right? When in deciding the CEO, it was a less than a minute long conversation between me, Shankar and Sundar. Who's going to be the CEO? And they graciously said, you are the sales guy. You have to be the CEO. They both are, one comes from Shankar comes from more of a process oriented background and Sundar comes from more security and engineering background. I was the one, from sales and a little bit of a marketing. So they said it makes total sense to have the person who had more sales experience to run this company. So that's how I became the CEO.
By default, you got the short stick, I guess.
Correct. Yeah, correct. Exactly.
That's what happens when there's three and two of them vote for you to be, right?
Exactly.
So that's fantastic.
Yeah.
So you came into it, though, with some sales and sales management background.
Correct.
And you did the selling. But at some point, you went, oh, my gosh, we're going to need some more salespeople than just me.
Correct.
And you started building a sales team. So what was that moment when you went, I got to run this company and sell. It's starting to be too much. Remember back to that moment and tell us about that. And how did you start to build your sales team to where it is today?
Yeah. Again, a few things. As I grew my career, not as a CEO, even as a sales rep, one thing was very clear, especially within the sales organization, it is kind of unwritten mantra. One of my mentors said it is still in my brain. Number one was compensation drives behavior. The second one is time kills deals. These two things, it is always in my mind. And as you said, when we started scaling, we as an organization, we were looking at, okay, what is that year one? What is the behavior that we want? We started framing our entire references towards that behavior thing that we want. Our number one behavior at that time, when back in 2016, 17 timeframe, was number of customers, not the dollar, not profitability.
Number of customers.
Number of customers. So we started thinking about units, basically, essentially units. We said, you know, we had milestone 15 customers, and then became 50 customers, 100 customers, you know, 200 customers. That's the benchmark that we had. As long as they are paying, we said we are going to take them. As long as they're going to, you know, be on a paying customer list, we are going to focus on, you know, units. So we tried to frame the whole overall company's compensation in that mindset. You know, all the sales rep, you know, were compensated based on units more than the dollar they're bringing in. So it was clearly evident that people were, you know, motivated to get the units, and we were able to get that numbers that we bought. You know, we never missed the quote for that, you know.
This is very typical behavior for a startup and a smart play, right?
Yeah.
Because people always want to know, well, who else is your customer? Do you have any customers like me? Do you work with anyone in my industry? Mm-hmm. So you have to go get them, right? And the dollars and the profit aren't as important in the beginning.
Absolutely.
At a startup, or some types of startups, of course. Some are different, but you did it. You got everybody engaged in that vision to go and get customers, and you rewarded them, and they did it.
And yeah, because we have seen conflicting messaging from the sales team, you know, other organizations. They will say, oh, we need more customers, but they will compensate more on, you know, customer, you know, and the sales rep who's bringing in the biggest revenue, biggest
yes.
dollar. In that, what happens is at that time, you know, it's too conflicting, right? You need more customers, but you are saying I'm compensating and a rep who's bringing in more dollars. So the more the dollar, the more the sales cycle, the longer the sales cycle, it takes the time, you know, basically, you know, if you are.
Right. It's a longer sales cycle when you want $1 million than when you want 50,000. It's just
exactly.
quite clear, right? So, and we know that salespeople will do exactly what you pay them to do, won't they?
Exactly. So we knew, and then we changed it. It is, you know, I'm not talking about one instance. This actually, what we did is we tested three different scenarios. Number one, in 2017, is all about units. In 2018, we shifted the focus towards revenue. We said we have enough customers. Now we are going to shift the focus and we are going to compensate based on the dollar, not units. Dollar is more important. We changed. And you could have seen our books changing, like, you know, the ship is turning. We absolutely saw that. And 2019, there was another change. We said where dollar is important, but we are going to compensate more if it is a multi-year contract.
Yes.
So that is change. And I literally saw those different behaviors right in front of our eyes. You know, no fault. That is the part of the game, I guess. You know, when we said units, we got units and we paid only for units. No matter how big deal you bring in, we paid. And second, we said not units, dollar. Third, longer the contract, you paid more. So today, most of our contracts are longer term contracts, 3 years, sometimes even 5 year contracts. So that is the behavior that we see, no matter what. Also, don't forget the other phrase that I said, time kills deals.
Yes.
We don't like to slack on deals. We try to get, you know, in fact, one of our core value is what we call as GID. GID stands for get it done. You know, that's the phrase that we had. So everybody knows how quick, nimble, and fast we can move forward, no matter what department it is. Contract department will hum and hustle. If you say, hey, this deal is going to happen in the next 2 days, we just need to get it. You know, that's the momentum that we've created. Most importantly, out of all these things, what we started from very scratch is we recognize we're not selling Apple or Tesla here. Which why I'm saying this is not product sell by itself, no matter what sales team you have. You know, we are a sales-driven company. You know, we have to keep the lights on. The sales team has to, you know, close deals. You know, no matter how great the product is as a startup, that was our biggest challenge. So we, as a company, celebrated every small milestone the sales team brought in. Everybody, from top to bottom, even an intern who's on the engineering team, was made part of the sales team. We said, okay, you're going to get, you know, something special out of every time that we close a deal. We made it so transparent. Everybody in the company is feel like they're trying to sell something. You know, they're selling something. They are
helping
sales team to close the deal. So
it's so important. I really hope that everyone out there listening heard what you said. You celebrate every deal, no matter how big, no matter how small, and every person who played a role in that. Because in your company, like you said, it's a sales-driven company. Everybody sells.
Absolutely.
Everybody can impact the customer. Everybody can help the customer get what they need and grow. And so we have to focus on that, right? And celebrate it. So
absolutely.
I love that because I think a lot of companies don't do that and they blow right by it and people don't feel appreciated for the efforts that they made towards the customer.
Keep in mind, these celebrations, these positivity are contagious. That could go a long way. It kept the momentum. Every small thing we celebrated, it kept the momentum going on the engineering side. You know, that brings me to the second value. The first value is GID, get it done. The second value, what we call it as an S4. S4 stands for see something, say something. It is every company today, people will say, how do we remove silos between, you know, product team and engineering team and sales
team.
Right.
Sales and marketing, customer success, all these silos, right?
Yeah. So what we created is, we call it as an S4. It's a, you know, you can see there's a, you know, huge inbox for S4. Every day we get two or three emails internal. It's for internal purposes, right? You know, basically the idea is if you see something, say it to the group, the corresponding team will respond. You know, everybody needs to, you know, as simple as you walk into your pantry and you don't have enough, you know, tissue papers there, facial tissue, let the office manager know there is not enough paper. Don't assume that office manager will take care of things without you telling them. The idea there is you, similarly, when the sales reps goes and do the demo to a prospect and the prospect is saying, hey, I like this feature. I saw somewhere, we have this pain point. Don't assume the product managers will take it. You become the product. Say, the product manager can simply say, no, I'm not going to do it. I'm going to do it. Or, hey, it is in the roadmap. That is their responsibility. Your responsibility as a sales rep has to say it. And, you know, you saw it, you better say it. They will respond.
And on the other side of that, people receive it, right? So if people aren't defensive, so a lot of times people won't say anything because they feel like somebody's going to be defensive. But if the rule is, if you see it, say something, then everyone, that's great. Thank you. I already knew and I'm on it.
Yep.
Perfect. Don't need to be defensive about it. But what if I didn't see it myself and you brought it to my attention? I'd be like, thank you so much. I didn't see that, Ganesh. Yep. You know, thanks for bringing that to my attention. So I think it's a beautiful thing. So let's go back to, I love this, how, you know, your whole company has responsibility for sales and gets celebrated. That's fantastic. What are some of the challenges that you had each year when you changed the compensation? Because I know the salespeople that I work with and myself when I was in sales, every time it'd be like, you're changing my comp plan again. You know, salespeople just feel uncomfortable. And I think partly it's because when companies change comp plans on salespeople, they make it so complicated or convoluted. It sounds like you made it very simple. Yes, last year we were doing this. This year we're doing this. But tell me about any challenges you came across as you moved through those three stages and changed the compensation on your salespeople.
You know, one thing we did, you know, because of my background as a sales manager, I had a very similar experience prior. You know, when you change comp plan, people don't like it, right? So what we did is we always set the expectation, this is 1 year comp plan. We stick to that. No matter how lucrative, how tempted we are, we don't change it. We wait for January 1st or December 31st and the clock resets. January 1st.
Oh my gosh, I love that. So you're being clear with the expectation up front. We are going to do this for 1 year.
Correct.
And then I promise you it will change.
It will change.
Versus people being surprised when things change.
Yeah. And if this was very clearly communicated, even in their offer letter, we say it is every January 1st, the clock resets and we will, depending on what management decides, we will go in the direction. And everybody knows there is no surprise. We don't change in between. We don't change in between. Oh, last quarter. Because a lot of times this uncertainty is what causes the sales team confusion, right? You know, we are okay to
right.
go that path of, okay, 4 quarters, this is your goal. This is what you need to achieve. You know, if somebody joins us new, ramp up, this is their quota. And after ramp up, what does their full quota look like? But that will change eventually on January 1st. If, you know, last 2 years, we didn't change it, but still we communicated right. that we are going to change it, but we didn't change it because it's working. So, but yes. my entire sales team knows it will change. The quotas will change, the territories will change, the industries will change, but not in between, not intermittent that, you know, you'll be just redirected to something. So we try to make it very consistent. And I think we've been very successful. Yeah. From a challenge, when you ask what are the challenges as a company we faced, right? You know, initially when we, as a startup, you know, of course, most of the time, we are on an unknown brand. You know, nobody joined. Hiring was our biggest challenge. You would still continue to have that.
Oh, hiring. Because people don't know who you are. They don't want to come work for you, right?
Exactly, yeah. So, you know, finding the right talent and, you know, who also culturally fits in our organization, right? You know, who also, you know, we've been very particular not to bring in, you know, leaders from, you know, large organization, you know, they could be great. So it is true. People who have, you know, very successful from 0 to 1 could not be the same person from 1 to 10. You know, that right. is true. So you can't bring in a, you know, person who were already at 10 to 50 level and bring it to 0 to 1. So we knew that getting into. So we at, you know, at that equivalent time, we were looking for talent to fit those criteria, which means you're already, you know, filtering it down to a very small, you know, mm-hmm. circle of people. And especially being in a market like Portland, you know, the scarcity is very high, especially for good sales team. You know, we are not in Bay Area or a bigger market that a lot of talent pool available, especially back in the days, you know, when things were still in person. We, as a startup, we wanted to be all in one office room. You know, we want to celebrate. So today we are different. We are completely remote. We have people all over the world. But then back then we wanted to be in the office, you know, and specifically having people meet those criteria that we were looking for. It kind of, that became the challenge. But, we were very picky too. We were very picky of whom we onboarded in the initial days. So that was, you know, challenges.
So how many of the salespeople that you brought in the beginning are still with you?
We have, outside of 2, we have pretty much everybody still there.
Wow.
Last, you know, people who joined us in the first 2 years, probably we have lost only 2 people out of that. So we are about 25, 30 employees now. In fact, if I count India, pretty much, you know, it's even, it is intact. Our first sales rep, Mitch, is our sales director today. Our third sales rep, Connor Martin, is our VP of sales, US region. And the first rep who joined us in India, back in India, he's our director of what we call as ROW, rest of the world. The team is still intact. You know, that is one of the pride moment I still have. I know, no matter, you know, how big or long, wide we grow, I feel very humbled that the team we have put together is an amazing team. Nobody could have asked for a better team than this one.
I think it's because it goes both ways. You treat them well, they treat you well.
Exactly.
You have taught them to be flexible and adaptable. So you have changed with the demands of the growth of your company, changing with the marketplace. And they understood it because you explained it clearly to them, set the expectations clearly, and celebrate it. And so it goes both ways. And so tell us, what does your sales team look like today? How many salespeople are there? What's the organizational structure? It sounds like you have a sales manager and a VP of sales. Tell us what that looks like today and how many salespeople you have.
So we've almost about 25 sales reps who carry quota just on the new business between India and the US. This does not include what we call account managers. We have about 8 account managers.
Oh, wow.
Primarily sell into existing customer base.
Big customer relationships.
Correct.
Yeah.
So these are only AE. So we have what we call it as, sales we have senior AEs and then AEs, and you know, those are kind of two variants we have. Each team, there are three different teams. Each team has what we call it as a combination of senior AEs and AEs reporting to sales manager. The sales manager then reports to our VP of sales. You know, that's how it works today. The structure is, you know, and this does not include any of our, you know, sales development reps. That team is completely part of our marketing team. This team I'm talking about is only a carrying quota on their own to close new business. So that's VPs of VP of sales and director of sales and, you know, senior AEs. We also what we call follow, you know, player coach model. You know, if you know that model, so where, you know, well, some of the senior AEs step up, into that player coach. They still have their individual quota. They carry their quota, but still help the up and coming, you know, AEs to ramp up and close deals. You know, we have noticed those kind of individuals, and even, you know, a couple of individuals have been promoted to sales manager or sales directors, or those people who stood up and raised their hand and said, hey, I'm willing to help. And they've been very successfully helping. Today, they don't carry quota. They have the team quota, but they don't have individual quota.
That's fantastic. I love that structure that you have. How many sales managers do you have for a team of 25 quota carrying?
Today we have about three.
Wow, they have big teams, but that's why you have your AEs stepping up to help.
Correct.
That's fantastic. Well, it sounds like you have built an amazing sales organization. And now, Ganesh, I want to know, where are you going in the future? I mean, we've lived through, you know, the shutdown that was caused by the pandemic. You had your pre-pandemic sales and then your pandemic sales team and what they were doing. Now, as we're coming out of this and things are going to be somewhat in person, but also we're going to have to continue to be virtual sellers. What do you see as the future for your sales organization? How much bigger will it grow? And what kinds of things will you continue to change and adapt to meet the demands in your marketplace?
Absolutely. You know, to be honest, there's not quite a lot of changes in the way we operate. I'll tell you why. Because RFPIO application is meant to solve, you know, remote collaboration issue. Yeah. This is a product for people who are remote dispersed team. That is why. And even pre-pandemic or post-pandemic, we never changed. We don't like to fly people in and out. We don't have this fancy steak dinner. So we try to stay focused on closing business virtually always. Even before pandemic, we are most of the deals, I would say 99% of our deals are virtually closed deals. You know, that's how we, and we have about 1,500 customers. So I'm talking about 99% virtually closed deals. You can imagine.
Wow.
So in that means we feel today, even on our customers, the concentration of decision makers are not there. These are all distributed teams. The customers.
Yeah, they're spread out, right? Yeah. Everybody's seeming to stay somewhat virtual. Yeah.
So our you know, prediction, or even before pandemic, we always been virtual sales. You know, in our sales, we don't fly people or we don't go to customer place unless if it was like one or two few instances where the customer requested the vendors during the RFP process. Oh, ironic, right? RFP software, RFP for an RFP software. They ask you to come and present. So we've been through that kind of situation. But, you know, that is always the case. But where kind of our mind shift changed is what I talked about. Initially, we wanted the team to come to the office, sell. But today, we are, as a company, is evolving. We are learning. This can be done even remote working, not remote sales. I'm talking about people can
remote working.
Yeah, you can sell this product remotely. You don't need to come into the office. As long as the biggest challenge, I think we are now overcoming right now, is onboarding sales rep. Right now, it's not easy. The onboarding, physical onboarding, is much better than, you know, virtual onboarding, because these people need to know the process. They have to know the product. They need to know the market. How do we overcome that? I think we have not, you know, at a stage where it is like a well-oiled machine. No, we are learning every day. We recently hired our, you know, a person dedicated for onboarding specialist, you know, even for a company.
Wonderful.
So they do take care of this process. So, you know, that is becoming a challenge, but I think it is a challenge that anybody can overcome with the right process and the right intent. I think we have the right intent.
I agree. You can really do a good job with virtual onboarding, but it's different. Yes. It takes a bit more effort. I'm glad to hear that you hired someone to focus completely on that, because that was going to be one of my suggestions. You know, at this point, if you look at your future and you expect to continue onboarding virtually, then you really do need someone who can make sure that happens really well, because Absolutely. We all know that if the better we onboard, then the faster they'll ramp up and start selling for us, which is what we all want. So how much bigger do you think your sales team's going to get in the next maybe 3 to 5 years?
So I'll, in terms of headcount, you mean?
Yeah.
So I think looking at similar patterns, right, you know, there are commonalities between most successful companies and, you know, RFPO. There is commonalities, I've noticed it. Number one commonality is, this is not, though it is RFP, could be a niche use case, but it is not tied to one vertical. It is not just selling to healthcare. It is not only financial. This is agnostic. Construction companies need to
across the board.
So it is horizontal. It is agnostic of industry. Similarly, it's also agnostic of geographical regions, right? You know, you go to Asia, it is called, you know, it is probably not called an RFP. It is called as tender. You go to Europe, it is not called as an RFP. It's called as bid. If you're in North America, it's called an RFP. The use case is same there across the globe. So if I have to translate that into other successful companies, you know, I've seen, you know, sales team ranging anywhere between 100 or 200, you know, eventually.
There's just so much growth available
Absolutely.
To you.
Yeah. So I would not
and
be
you
surprised.
Said you have about 1,500 clients. Is that what you said, 1,500?
Correct.
With 25 salespeople and 8 AEs, right? So if you start to think about expanding out, I mean, you're definitely going to need some more salespeople, but it sounds like, you know, there's so much out there for your company to do and grow into.
Absolutely, we do. And I strongly believe that we are just getting started. This is a huge market to go after. In fact, when we raise funding, one of the first questions, most of the, you know, private equity firms do ask this question, hey, what does your TAM look like? I did say, hey, it's very difficult to calculate a TAM for this. And they initially laughed, and they eventually did agree with me, because they were doing the due diligence and they could not come up with a number. And they said, yeah, this seems to be huge. Whatever number they throw, you know, yeah, there is a market for it. You know, yeah, we can, for namesake, we can call out a TAM, you know, but there is. So that's why we are very optimistic and bullish about this space and the future of this, you know, a company.
Yeah, I know very few companies that don't have to do RFPs, right? If they have a complex sale, if they're selling something, they may have a lot of deals they can do that don't require an RFP, but they're always getting RFPs. So like you said, across the board, doesn't matter what the industry is, RFPs will come in and they need a really solid way to track it. So you are solving a universal problem that everybody needs. Well, my goodness. Thank you so much, Ganesh. I just want to ask you for some parting words. So for CEOs that are between, you know, just starting and maybe 10 years old, you're in that, you know, 5, almost 6-year-old range. What are a couple of things that you really want them to think about, to consider doing at their company if they're not right now, that would really make it easier for sales and would really, as the CEO, be so supportive of sales?
Yeah, I think, like I said, you know, again, I'll reiterate it, you know, compensation drives behavior. Make sure you're not creating a conflicting compensation plan. Make it clean and simple, easy for sales team to understand, and go after it. It will make your life so much easier. Don't complicate things. Oh, if you don't devise your comp plan for a 20% of scenario, make it 80%. Make it so simple people can understand and go for it. Right? In the initial stage, you can become more creative as you scale the business. But initially, you need to have the startup up and running. Make sure your compensation supports that model if you're hiring sales. And also, time kills deals. Keep make sure you're not taking so much of time. Make sure to be, you know, I always say this to the team, you know, my co-founders and I may have fancy titles in the company, CEO, CTO, CIO, CPO, you call the C, you know, XO roles. But end of the day, the way we see is we are a support staff in the office to help my sales team to be successful. Just have that mindset. End of the day, don't envy your sales manager making more money than you do. Be happy about it.
Right.
Be very proud that your sales managers are making more money than you did as a CEO. Absolutely, I had a similar situation many times. I've been very happy. But again, I'm not saying I'm a saint to say, oh, they're making... No. End of the day, my company's equity, my company's value as
in a, right, the value of your company grows when those salespeople make a lot of money.
Absolutely. So have that mindset. Don't envy them. Help them. Enable them to be more successful. Find every small reason to be celebrating. So that's also a few words.
And celebrate. I love that. And I love that you feel like you're the support for sales, because I think that's so important. And salespeople need their senior leaders. And this is one of the ways we can keep a deal moving.
Exactly.
Bring in the senior leader to talk to their senior leader. Bring in the subject matter experts. Bring in the other important people in your company to talk to important people at their company.
Absolutely.
If you're there to support that activity, the deals keep moving versus stalling.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's the whole idea. So,
well, I love it. Thank you so much for sharing. I just... so excited to watch what comes next for your company. You're doing so great and there's so much growth potential. Very excited. You let me know when you're hiring so I can put the word out to the people that I know who will want to work for a great company like yours. And I'll always be happy to share that.
The time is now. Just to let them know we are hiring now as we speak.
All right. We will get the word out about that for you with this podcast. And also I will post that on social media. So I can't thank you enough for sharing how you built your sales organization and some of the things that made you successful and some of the things that were hard for you as well. So thanks again for being on the show. And I'll look forward, like I said, to keeping my eye on your company and watching it grow.
Thank you so much, Alice. It's been a pleasure talking to you. And, you know, you're doing an amazing job to, you know, these are education sessions. People need to know how the sales team and the executives need to support their sales team. So I'm glad that you are doing this. And, you know, any way I can be supportive of you, just feel free to let me know. I'm very happy to be part of it.
Oh, thank you so much. All right, you have a terrific day.
Thanks for tuning in to Sales Talk for CEOs. You can find me at alicehyman.com. Be sure and connect with me on LinkedIn and let me know that you heard the show. If you found value in today's episode, please subscribe, write a review, and share the show with another CEO.